The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later on this edition of Ozarks, the challenges of getting Medicaid-eligible Arkansans ready for the work requirements some will face to continue to receive benefits. This week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal reports on the efforts to make sure people can meet the new work requirements implemented by the state legislature. That's in the second half hour of our show. After Ozarks this afternoon on NPR's Here and Now, Hernan Diaz's new debut novel, In the Distance, was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. It's a Western, but the stranger coming to town is a hulking Swede who speaks no English and hates violence. A conversation with Diaz about his twist on the Western, plus the afternoon's news on Here and Now, from 1 to 3 this afternoon on 91.3. The 29th annual Jazz in June event at the Bonneville House in Fort Smith is scheduled to begin in just a few hours at 6:30 tonight. It is adding an additional name this year, so the formal title, Jazz in June, Razz in the Grove. The wine, food, cigars, bourbon, and music, part of a fundraiser for the Bonneville House Association, dedicated to preserving the 19th century home located on North 7th Street in Fort Smith. You can find out more at the Facebook page for Razz in the Grove. This week, the Walton Family Foundation, along with local and national partners, started gathering input from Northwest Arkansas residents about the future of housing in the region. A study and report commissioned by the foundation will focus on ways to make housing affordable and available to everyone, from minimum wage workers making $17,000 a year to professionals making three times that. So far, meetings have been held in Fayetteville, Bentonville, and Rogers. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek attended last night's meeting.
Dozens of people gathered around tables set up in a meeting room at the Rogers Public Library Wednesday evening.
I'd like one person from each table to just share that with the group so that each of the room can get a sense of what some of the other questions or thoughts were at each table.
A facilitator at each table was there to lead the discussion after the whole room heard a presentation from Enterprise Community Partners.
Was there anything that you're surprised to learn about the region or Rogers specifically or anything like that?
The facilitator in this case is Ethan Hunter, and he's in charge of writing down the group's thoughts so Enterprise can include them in their study.
I don't think this is specifically about just on Rogers, but I think 30% of your income, your gross, going toward your living expenses seems to me really high, as defined by the federal government.
If you have an education, you move into the area, or you have a good job because you have the education, you can do well here. If you don't, and you're working minimum wage jobs, and this graph shows it, you can't rent. You cannot afford it, especially when you're talking about net versus gross income. That it's just not there for them to rent in an affordable way.
And that's what Enterprise's preliminary data shows across all of the four major cities on the I-49 corridor. From Bentonville to Fayetteville, 25 to 35% of Northwest Arkansas's households are cost burdened, meaning they're spending more than 30% of their monthly income on housing costs. That percentage is even higher for renter households. In Fayetteville and Springdale, 47% of renter households are cost burdened. In Bentonville and Rogers, that percentage hovers around 38%. Here's Jordan Perlstein, a senior program director at Enterprise.
When we talked about cost burden, we said that was sort of income blind in the sense that no matter what your income is, if you're paying more than 30% of your income on housing and housing costs like utilities, you could be considered cost burdened. However, that means really different things when you're making 30% of the area median income.
Perlstein says it doesn't take that much for residents making 30% of the area median income to spend 30% of that income on housing. And the numbers show that in all four cities, nearly 90% of renters in that income group are cost burdened. In the bracket above that, so renters making 50% of the area median income, about 80% are cost burdened. Pearlstein says the availability and affordability factor plays a role in those numbers.
The first question we were asking around were the actual brick-and-mortar supply of housing and the rents that those housing units are being offered for. To whom are those affordable? And when we look at just brick-and-mortar and what the rents are for those units, it seems to suggest, okay, yeah, there are enough units for these different sort of income categories that exist in the community.
But Pearlstein says when you incorporate the affordability of units into that availability, the picture gets a lot less rosy.
And what you start finding is that a lot of people that, for instance, if there's a set of houses that are available or that are affordable to people at 30% area median income, those might have people in them that actually have 50% area median income or 80% area median income. And so they're getting a pretty good deal. That's great for them. But it then means that that supply of housing that is affordable to that population is not actually available for them to rent.
Enterprise's initial data shows that's the case in all four cities. In Rogers, for example, there are about 1,500 extremely low-income renter households and only about 500 affordable and available units. In Fayetteville, that discrepancy is even greater, with 5,200 extremely low-income renters to 1,800 units. And Pearlstein says the number of units is likely to drop even further as Enterprise asks more detailed questions.
You know, how many of those units are actually habitable? How many of those units are in locations that have access to opportunities like good transportation and schools? And there's a whole other host of questions that we're going to be asking that we haven't really even dug into yet.
Enterprise's data shows the percentages of cost burden renters falls off as income increases. So about 45% of renters who make 80% of area median income are cost burdened, down to about 10% for cost burdened renters who make up to 120% of area median income. Pearlstein says she's found the Walton Family Foundation, which is funding the report, recognizes the area is changing quickly. And while there are many benefits to the economic growth,
also along with that, that there are some pinches that are starting to happen. Some people are feeling them more than others. But in recognition of the fact that the next 10 years are going to be really important for planning to ensure that whatever growth is happening is going to be equitable and accessible across the income spectrum.
And that goes for residents who are homeowners, too. The data shows about 15% of homeowners across the region are cost burdened. Back at the table at the Rogers Public Library, Ethan Hunter asks the members of his group to discuss what kind of values they'd like to see and how the region approaches housing its residents.
So I guess just start listing them off, I guess. And I'm only going to, if it's duplicated, I'm only going to put it once.
Yeah. So, safe, needs to be safe.
I think it should be dignified.
That's a good word.
Inclusive. Diverse.
Another question that was brought up during the meeting by several residents is how does the region actually make all this happen? Here's Jordan Pearlstein again.
I know it feels like a lot of talk, and I understand why people want action. I think in order to make sure that this is a strategy that's owned by the community, it does require people to do exactly what they did tonight, which is show up and get engaged and feel like they are part of whatever this strategy is going to be.
After its public meetings this week, Pearlstein says Enterprise's study phase will go through next month. Then they'll review policies and programs in the region to come up with recommendations and strategies for the area.
Some of what we'll do in crafting the strategies is identifying, you know, who some of the stakeholders or actors might be to implement them. And as we're coming up with those, working with those people throughout the process to make sure that they're bought into what those strategies are, making recommendations about how you build the regional infrastructure to do this. Some of that doesn't necessarily exist quite yet.
Pearlstein says Enterprise's hope is that the final report, which will come out at the end of the year, will become a tool that can be used by elected and city officials, as well as developers, to guide decisions about housing in the region. And she says right now, Northwest Arkansas is still ahead of the curve in tackling its housing issues.
And it feels like this is a good time and that there's an energy for it, there's a need for it, and it's a great time to do it. So I'm glad people are engaging.
Pearlstein says Enterprise will be back this fall for another round of focus groups and public meetings. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzanna Sitek.
Thank you all so much for really sticking with us, and have a wonderful evening.
There will be one more meeting held tonight in Springdale. It's going to be at the Shiloh Museum, and it starts at 5:30. Enterprise Community Partners will share updates and project materials on the Northwest Arkansas Regional Planning Commission website. You'll be able to find a link to that at OzarksAtLarge.com.
A free art workshop for children 7 to 12 will be held Friday, June 8th from 9:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. This children's grief workshop is designed for children who've lost a family member or loved one and need a creative and healing way to express feelings. Registration is required. 872-3364 or the Grief Center at Circle of Life Hospice for more. The 68th season of Opera in the Ozarks kicks off June 22nd at Inspiration Point in Eureka Springs with 22 performances over 4 weeks, featuring nearly 50 vocalists from around the nation performing De Fledermaus, The Barber of Seville, and The Ballad of Baby Doe. Tickets and season schedule at opera.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Monday, a majority of the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in favor of a Colorado baker who refused, on religious grounds, to bake a wedding cake for an engaged gay couple. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, the court had to reconcile the rights and dignity of gay persons seeking to celebrate marriage vows with fundamental religious freedoms under the First Amendment.
6 years ago, David Mullins and Charlie Craig, on the advice of their wedding planner, went to a bakery to order their wedding cake called Masterpiece Cake Shop in Lakewood, Colorado, where the couple were planning their wedding reception. Bakery owner Jack Phillips refused, reportedly saying that same-sex marriage is sinful. Colorado is among 21 states with laws barring discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The couple filed a complaint to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which ruled in their favor, as did the Colorado Supreme Court. So baker Jack Phillips appealed his case to the U.S. Supreme Court, complaining that being forced to bake a gay wedding cake would appear to be a concession in favor of same-sex marriage. Late last year, the Supreme Court heard arguments in the Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission case. On Monday, the court ruled in favor of the baker, but on narrow grounds, says Danielle Weatherby, associate professor of law at the University of Arkansas.
So in a 7-2 decision, the Supreme Court reversed the Colorado Civil Rights Commission's decision against the baker, holding really in a narrow way only that in considering the same-sex couple's claim of discrimination under state law, the agency did not make its decision in what they called a religion-neutral manner. In other words, no state agency or arm of the state may express hostility toward or base their decision on any party's religious beliefs. And to a majority of the court, that is just what the Colorado Civil Rights Commission did here. And the differential treatment of Phillips was evidence of anti-religious animus that the First Amendment strictly forbids.
Last September, Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge joined a 20-state coalition in filing an amicus brief with the U.S. Supreme Court to protect the baker's freedom of speech, who she wrote was, quote, under attack by the Colorado Civil Rights Commission for declining to bake a wedding cake for a same-sex couple, end quote. On Monday, in reaction to the Supreme Court's decision, Rutledge issued a statement framing it, quote, as a big win for religious liberty across the country, end quote. Again, Danielle Weatherby.
Now, what's really important to note is that the court did not decide whether the baker could discriminate against LGBT patrons in general, and the decision certainly does not suggest in any means that private business owners can generally refuse to serve LGBT patrons. The court left that issue, which stems from the clash between free exercise of religion and enforcement of anti-discrimination laws, for another day.
An issue which is playing out in states like Arkansas. In June 2015, Fayetteville City Council approved an ordinance prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity in housing, employment, and public accommodation, which voters later approved. Arkansas Civil Rights Act prevents discrimination on the basis of race, religion, national origin, gender, and disability, but not sexual orientation or gender identity. In the winter of 2017, the state Supreme Court struck down Fayetteville's ordinance, saying it violates Act 137, a state law passed in 2015 to bar cities and counties from extending protections to LGBTQ people not mentioned in state code. The state court handed the case back to a lower court to decide on the act's constitutionality, where it remains in process. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And you can hear every story, every interview, every edition of Ozarks at Large on your schedule if you'd like. We're available as a free podcast through services like Stitcher, Apple TV, iTunes, and many other services. You can also find the most recent editions of Ozarks on the Ozarks at Large page that comes with the free KUAF app for smartphones and tablets. And every day we post the show at ozarksatlarge.com. Also at ozarksatlarge.com, you'll find links that allow you to share the stories through email or social media. Now ahead on this edition of Ozarks, new work requirements are in place for some Arkansans in order to continue to receive Medicaid benefits. Work has been underway to make sure those recipients know just what they have to do.
I think it's spread across the state. I mean, obviously more in urban areas than rural. I think the challenges are probably going to be a little greater in rural areas because of transportation and internet logistics. But that's what we as a state are gearing up to try to help them overcome those barriers. At AFMC, we're making 1,600 calls a day right now to people that are subject to these work requirements to educate them.
Getting ready for another shift in benefits for some Arkansans included in this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report ahead on this Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large. If you're planning to join us at the Fayetteville Public Library in a couple of weeks for the KUAF Summer Night Swing, you may want to head to KUAF.com or digjazz.com right about now. There are very few tickets left. The Friday, June 22nd event includes musical performances from Keith and Ezra from Trout Fishing in America, from the Austin Farnham Quartet, from Outside the Lines, from the Matt Beach Quintet, and so many others. It is a night that is dedicated to celebrating two of the longest-running shows, well, actually the two longest-running shows on 91.3, Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsburg and The Pick and Post with Mike Shirky. They've been on the air so long that they were actually on KUAF 88.9 many years ago. Both shows have been on the air without fail for nearly 40 years. The night also serves as a fundraiser for KUAF. And as of 10 o'clock this morning, exactly 9 tickets left for the June 22nd affair. If you're unable to be with us at the Fayetteville Public Library on June 22nd, you can be with us on the air because we're going to broadcast this special show live from 7 to 10 that night on 91.3.
Artist donations of original, handcrafted works are now being accepted for the 2018 Fresh Start Annual Art Fundraiser benefiting the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter. The deadline to enter is August 3rd, and artists will be provided with a charitable tax receipt. NWAWS.com for more. The Artisphere Festival Orchestra, featuring over 90 musicians from around the world, presents its opening concert at Walton Arts Center under the baton of Maestro Corrado Rivera's Tuesday, June 19th. Performing Beethoven's Pastoral Symphony and Emperor Concerto, featuring Italian pianist Maurizio Baglini. Tickets at 443-5600 or ArtisphereFestival.org. The Trillium Salon Series and members of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra will present an evening of 21st century chamber music Monday, June 18th at 21C Museum Hotel in downtown Bentonville. This event is free, but seating is limited. TrilliumSalonSeries.com for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. Yesterday morning, we received a tour of the new Theater Squared home. No, it is not completed yet, but enough walls, rebar, and steel are in place so that Martin Miller, executive director at T2, can point out where everything will be when fall 2019 arrives.
This gives us much more flexibility to get the lights at the angles we want and to bring in things from above. Right now, if we wanted to bring in a sofa or a chandelier from above, it would be a very dangerous act. and you wouldn't want anyone underneath it because you'd just be dropping it off the catwalk. Here we'll have a whole automation system that'll let us fly things in during a show. And the other extraordinary trick of this space, and we'll actually go down into it, the entire stage is trapped. This is the only theater venue in the state that has this capacity, and probably in Oklahoma as well, as far as I know. But the whole stage will be platformed, but underneath it is a 12 to 13 foot space where you can bring things up from below as well.
We'll take you along on that tour, below, above, and through the not yet existing walls, on an early week edition of our daily Ozarks at Large program next week. But today, we want to make sure you know about something much more immediate when it comes to T2, the annual New Play Festival. It gets underway this weekend, and before we left the construction site in downtown Fayetteville yesterday, we asked Martin to give us a quick preview of the 2018 New Play Festival events.
Performances starting on Saturday, the first performance by Crescent Dragon Wagon, the full force of Eureka Springs and Northwest Arkansas history behind her. But what a great lineup we have for the New Play Festival this year. Theater Squared is actually one of the only theaters in the country with a playwright artistic director. I think there are maybe two or three out of hundreds and hundreds of professional theaters. We have a really big priority that we place on cultivating new plays for the American stage. We've seen several of them come from an idea to a workshop at the New Play Festival to a full production here, but others have done the same as they've gone to other stages elsewhere. Sundown Town, The Champion, The Spiritualist, My Father's War, these are all examples of shows that started at the New Play Festival, ended up on our stage, have been produced elsewhere. And this year, I think we've got Austin Ashford, this amazing performer/now playwright, doing a one-person show called Black Book, Crescent Dragon Wagon with Until Just Moistened, a fascinating title for a play having to do with when the cornbread's ready. And we've got Ann Garcia Romero, a play called Staging the Daffy Dame, which is if you took a lot of the big conversations around identity politics, but also around artistic creation and just who we are, each of us here in modern American society, and put it into a play, that would be a lovely way of doing it. And we've got Among the Western Dinka, which feels so familiar with its themes because of actual scandals within the last 10 years, even in the SEC. That's all I'll say about that, but worth watching for anybody in the local or university community. And then this amazing play, Crossing Minnesota, by Mary Catherine Nagel, who is a Cherokee playwright and also an extremely high-powered lawyer, kind of an amazing person who splits her time between Tulsa and Washington, D.C., with a great cast of professionals from the nation and from elsewhere who are going to be presenting this work about Sacagawea as you've never seen her before. Really honest work on its way to a world premiere at Portland Center Stage next season. But people have their chance to make their imprint here first.
Martin Miller is the executive director of Theater Squared. Performances of the scripts included in the 2018 New Play Festival will be at several venues, including in Bentonville, The Preacher's Son, Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, and The Record, and in Fayetteville at Theater Squared's current home in the Nadine Baum Studios. Details can be found at playarkansas.org. Also this weekend, the 18th annual intersection of food, wine, and supporting of the arts called The Art of Wine takes place at Walton Arts Center in downtown Fayetteville. Tomorrow is the first part of the two-day Art of Wine, Uncorked. Recently, Missy Kincaid, the Vice President of Development at Walton Arts Center, came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to give us highlights, including that most obvious of highlights of The Art of Wine, wine.
Oh, there's lots of wine. And we have two different events that make up the Art of Wine weekend. And the first one is Friday night, June the 8th, and it's called Uncorked. We have some new things, though, this year with Uncorked. First of all, of course, we've had our renovated building, and so we're going to be really activating the entire facility, including events in our beautiful Rose Garden. We're going to have a new experience in the Joy Pratt Markham Gallery that's going to kind of entice your sixth sense, and you'll actually be taken on a tour through the gallery where you get to experience the sight, the taste, the smell, even the feel, and then the sound of wine, which might be two glasses clinking before one enjoys the taste of wine. But we have other activations throughout the campus.
You said your sixth sense?
I think the sixth sense is that you're going to be walking through experiencing all of those. They're calling it the sixth sense.
I've heard a lot of people refer to ESP as the sixth sense.
Oh, well, one can only imagine.
That's part one. Part two?
That's part one. So Uncorked is Friday night, and then on Saturday we have our winemaker's dinner, which is a beautiful event on the Baum Walker stage, and we are so grateful. The E&J Gallo Company has sponsored this for many, many years. This year we have a winemaker from the Columbia Vineyard in the state of Washington who will be hosting us and walking us through the evening with a six-course meal that's prepared especially for the event by the chef and staff at Bordino's. And this is just, it's such a beautiful event, Kyle. When people walk in and they see the stage that's been extended, which is something that is just, it's fun to be on stage at Walton Arts Center because you're so used to seeing Broadway artists or famous musicians, and now you get the chance to be the star on stage. But when you walk in and you see that many glasses on the tables, the room just literally sparkles. So it's a beautiful event, and there's a certain element of formality. You're supposed to have a white tablecloth, apparently, at a wine tasting, which is something that I learned the hard way, as you can imagine. But you walk in and you see this beautifully formal setting, but I have to tell you that people get to the point where they're really just having a good time. It's very comfortable and casual, partly because of the just atmosphere and the party feel that's happening during the winemaker's dinner.
Don't feel bad, but you know what I think of when I hear white linen and wine is don't get the rosé. You're going to ruin
the
linen.
Well, you're not going to worry about that. We want our guests to have a great time.
All right.
This year, we also have something special with the winemaker's dinner, and we have an honorary chair. And we've not had that before, but Billy Joe Starr is our honorary chair for this winemaker's dinner. And it's in part because Billy Joe has been a part of Art of Wine since the beginning. Certainly, Liquor World, which is owned by her son Kent Starr, has played a very important role as the whole Art of Wine has developed. But we're really delighted that Billy agreed to be the honorary chair because she has embodied Walton Arts Center and her passion for arts education and bringing the arts to Northwest Arkansas still continues to be so very strong. And so we're just delighted that she's going to be our honorary chair.
All this raises money.
We absolutely.
Well, for a chance for thousands?
Yes.
Tens of thousands
of
children?
Yes, tens of thousands, more than that. The Art of Wine is a fundraiser for Walton Arts Center. It's really important for people to understand that Walton Arts Center is a nonprofit performing arts center. And this year, about 43% of the Walton Arts Center's budget came from contributed income. So that means when you're buying a ticket, it's very likely that the person next to you might be a friend of Walton Arts Center, and their gift helped make your ticket a little bit more affordable. It's also really important to know that we try to serve 100% of the elementary school children in the region. And one may think that a $2 or $3 ticket to a school show may not be that expensive for your family, but there are a lot of families that simply cannot even afford a $2 or $3 ticket. And so we are so pleased that through the Colgate Classroom Series, we serve about 35,000 school children and educators. They not only come to these Colgate classroom performances, but we have a very strong professional development opportunity for teachers. We offer master classes. We offer resident artists to go into the schools. Obviously, sometimes it's easier to transport a small company to the school than bringing thousands of school children. So really, we work very hard with the local school districts to try to reach as many of those school-age children as we can. But I like to say that we actually are all, we're still doing education for students of all ages. And so things like the 10 by 10 series, the master classes that we offer outside of even the standard performances are also an important part of what the Art of Wine fundraising makes possible.
Missy Kincaid is the Vice President of Development with Walton Art Center. The first of the 2 days of the Art of Wine Uncorked tomorrow night at Walton Art Center. You can find out all the details at waltonartcenter.org. And next weekend, when Eureka Springs Blues Weekend is taking place, all kinds of free and ticketed performances will be available all around the town. We want to make sure you know of one significant change in the lineup. John Mayall has had to cancel his performance because of illness, but Coco Montoya will now headline at The Odd with special guest Carolyn Wonderland on Saturday, June 16th. John Mayall has canceled his entire tour for 2018, but according to his Facebook page, is planning to reschedule as many dates as possible at a later time. And to see the entire schedule for the Eureka Springs Blues Weekend beginning next weekend, go to EurekaSpringsBlues.com.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today we're in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio with Megan Cuddy. She's Director of Advancement at the Economic Opportunity Agency and the EOA Children's House. Thanks so much for coming up, Megan. Good to see you. First, let's talk about EOA, the overall. What is it? How long has it been around in this community?
EOA is a community action agency that has been in Washington County since 1965.
Wow.
Okay. So we've been around a long time, and our mission is to bring people out of poverty, give them the skills and the resources necessary to alleviate that effects of poverty.
Specifically, I guess kind of an offshoot or option is the Children's House. Did this come along later, or was that always a part of this program?
It came along later. Okay. EOA Children's House was established in 1978 by some concerned citizens, seeing children that needed more services than they currently were getting, children that had been abused or neglected. And so they established Children's House. We're not a shelter, which is a common misconception. The children come to us to get any type of therapy services, preschool education, basically anything they need to heal from the abuse and neglect that they have suffered. We have a wait list to get in at all times, unfortunately. And we do serve both Benton and Washington County children for these services. But yes, we're currently have an enrollment of 89 children at Children's House.
Y'all's annual fundraiser.
The 16th annual Summer Salsa is on June 16th.
That's a Saturday.
Okay. Yeah, Saturday night at the Fayetteville Town Center. Okay. It starts at 7 p.m. and goes until 11. And we have a lot of fun. We have a new band playing this year called Funk Factory. We'll have some fantastic items in our silent auction. We have our annual salsa tasting competition.
And this is kind of what it's all built
around, right? Yes. Many of the restaurants in Northwest Arkansas compete each year. The audience gets to participate and vote on their favorite salsa, and we will award that trophy to the best salsa at the end of the night.
Okay, so this is June 16th. Again, the hours?
Yes, 7 p.m. to 11 p.m.
All right. Do we need to register? Can we buy at the door?
You can buy at the door if we're not sold out yet.
Okay.
However, we are getting pretty close to that, so it's best to go ahead and register at childrenshousenwa.org.
That's childrenshousenwa.org. Megan Cuddy, Director of Advancement with the EOA Children's House. Thanks so much for coming up and telling us about this event.
Thank you for having me. Look forward to seeing you all at Summer Salsa.
The Community Spotlight on KUAF, where local matters.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. House Speaker Jeremy Gilliam is resigning this month from the Arkansas Legislature to take a governmental affairs job at the University of Central Arkansas in Conway. The Republican lawmaker began serving in the House in 2011 and was just the fifth speaker in state history to hold the top post for two terms. He had already decided not to run for re-election. He told our content partner KUAR in Little Rock he didn't know where he'd wind up after being a lawmaker.
I did not know what the Lord had in store for me. I really didn't. There were a lot of different conversations that were taking place, some I was a part of and some I wasn't, about my future and where I might go and land. And there was a lot of rumors going around about different agencies that I might, you know, be a part of or different things that I might wind up doing. And I just tried to be patient and kind of let those develop organically.
However, Democratic Party of Arkansas Chair Michael John Gray says he saw it coming and says he worries about the idea of a revolving door between state lawmakers and lobbying.
This was an opportunity that he couldn't pass up. None of us were shocked that he was getting this position. It's something that has been out there, you know, worst kept secret out there for a while. No judgment there from me by any means. But, yeah. We all have to take care of our family. It does speak, though, to, you know, our capital is full of ex-elected officials that are now either lobbyists or in government relations positions.
Gillum will make $130,000 a year at the University of Central Arkansas, almost $100,000 a year more than his pay as Speaker of the House. The House will meet June 15th to select an interim speaker. Gillum says he suspects 2019 Speaker-designate Matthew Shepard will get the post. The University of Arkansas Fort Smith is getting a boost from the National Endowment of the Arts. The NEA is giving UAFS $150,000 for a community reading event. The Big Read in Fort Smith will include a visit to the city from author Emily St. John Mandel. Her book, Station 11, was nominated for the National Book Award in 2014. UAFS was one of 79 nonprofit organizations to receive the NEA grant. New data suggests Arkansas is doing a better job of addressing child welfare cases. The Senate Committee on Children and Youth met this week with representatives of a division of the State Department of Human Services to discuss changes in child welfare cases within the last 2 years. County Legal Operations oversees cases of child maltreatment and provides legal representation for children. The division reported seeing a decline of 170 cases over the last 2 years and a higher success rate in court compared to previous years. DHS attorney Gerald Shoreham says it's a positive trend.
I think a lot of people come into this to, you know, as in most things, you know, seeking to get something out of it. And we do offer a great curriculum and access to these things that some of these, I mean, there's mayors from towns that come through this. They would never be able to have the budget or to access this kind of information. But what they provide that someone else takes out. And so the networking that the people come in and what creates out of that is one of the most valuable assets.
The meeting also covered annual reports by the Arkansas Crimes Against Children Division. They report lower numbers across the board. Committee members generally say they are pleased to see an overall decrease of cases. Bentonville residents, take note. The city will be testing its storm siren tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Maria Fossey, a junior at the University of Arkansas, is the 2018 winner of the Annika Award. The award is given annually to the athlete deemed the best Division I women's golfer in the country. She is the first ever winner from Arkansas, the first ever winner from an SEC school, and the first ever winner not from UCLA. The award has been handed out annually since 2014. And the Major League Baseball draft is over, and the 2018 edition ended up with 11 Arkansas Razorbacks selected. That ties a school record for most baseball players taken from the University of Arkansas in a single draft. The Razorbacks' current season does continue Saturday when Arkansas hosts South Carolina for a best-of-three Super Regional, all three games at Baum Stadium. Game two will be Sunday afternoon, and game three, if necessary, will be Monday night. All three games are scheduled to be shown on ESPN.
KUAF and the Walmart Amp are giving you the chance to win two front row tickets to see American folk singer-songwriter Ray LaMontagne and his Part of the Light tour, along with special guest Nico Case, Tuesday, June 12th. Registration is available at KUAF.com. The winner will be announced Friday, June 8th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large.
The annual June Bug Jam, a fundraising event benefiting the Headwater School, will take place Saturday from 3 until dark in downtown Red Star. Entertainment includes Opal Agafier and the Sweet Nothings and Arkansas. There will also be a kid zone. There will be local food. There will be raffles. There will be fun. They say there will be games. What there will not be, please, dogs. Don't bring your dogs. If you'd like to know more about the June Bug Jam on Saturday, you can go to Facebook and then look for Headwaters June Bug Jam. Archaeologists of the Arkansas Archaeological Survey and volunteers with the Arkansas Archaeological Society will arrive at Pea Ridge National Military Park this month to conduct investigations at archaeological sites within the park. The group's annual training program begins Saturday and will run through the month, and it contributes to an ongoing cooperative research and management program with the National Park Service, and it's all going to be conducted alongside the University of Arkansas Archaeological Field School. On the 16th of this month, there will be an open house to tour the archaeology lab and visit one of the sites. The open house will let all of us have an opportunity to learn about the annual training program. If you'd like to know more, an old school phone number, 283-5720. And the Bentonville Public Library will host the Bentonville Police Department for safe driving lessons for teens. Topics will include texting and driving. You should not do that. Intoxicated driving. Certainly shouldn't do that. As well as roadside safety. This safe driving lessons for teens is scheduled for June 12th from noon until 3 in the afternoon. To register for the event, visit the calendar at bentonvillelibrary.com.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. On today's report, we will check in with Specialized Real Estate Group. The Fayetteville developer has moved one step closer to beginning construction of a new mixed-use project in downtown Bentonville. We'll also talk healthcare with leaders from the Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families and the Arkansas Foundation for Medical Care. And a topping-off ceremony is set for a $16.5 million project in Bentonville. That's all straight ahead today on this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
Fayetteville Developer Specialized Real Estate Group has received approval from the Bentonville Planning Commission for a large-scale mixed-use project in downtown Bentonville. In a 7-0 vote, planners approved the proposal for the development on Southeast 2nd Street called Park Central. The project will also have frontage to Central Avenue just east of the downtown square. The company's plans for the site include construction of 25 two-story townhomes, each with one or two bedrooms set above garages. This is the second Bentonville project for Specialized Real Estate Group, whose Fayetteville portfolio includes the Uptown Fayetteville development just off Joyce Boulevard. The company's multi-million dollar project near the corner of Central and Southeast J Streets in Bentonville is well underway, and that will add 263 apartments to the market, blended with a mixture of office, retail, or commercial tenants. If you missed it on Sunday morning on Talk Business and Politics, Roby Brock welcomed Ray Hanley and Marquita Little to the program. Hanley is the CEO of the Arkansas Foundation for Medical Care, and Little is the Health Policy Director for Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. Their discussion included analysis of a new study from the Urban Institute on the state's Medicaid expansion program, Arkansas Works, and how that will be impacted by a new federal work requirement. In March, Arkansas became the third state granted a federal waiver allowing it to require some Medicaid expansion beneficiaries to work. The state has been implementing the work requirement for the past 2 months, and enrollees in the Arkansas Works program began reporting their work activities June 1st.
I think one of the things that really stood out to me was the level of detail where they were really able to narrow it down and look at barriers like internet access and transportation barriers. So it really, I think, added to the conversation that we've already been having in the state about how to prepare for the new work requirement that'll be implemented.
Takeaway for me, and Ray, I want to get your take on this, was just that the universe that we're talking about is not that big. Oh, when yeah. you really look at it, it was I think 31,000 were in what was group two, which would be potentially non-exempt mm-hmm. but already working, right. 39,000 in group three that are potentially non-exempt and not working. Did it strike you as odd that it wasn't a bigger universe out there?
I thought it was understated, and it's probably going to be a little larger than that, mm-hmm. but probably not by a lot.
What is the where do you think these folks are located? Judging from the Institute study, it seems like they're everywhere. Urban populations, rural populations. I think the myth has been that a lot of these workers are in rural, mm-hmm. underserved parts of the state.
I think it's spread across the state. I mean, obviously more in urban areas than rural. I think the challenges are probably going to be a little greater in rural areas because of transportation and internet logistics. But that's what we as a state are gearing up to try to help them overcome those barriers. At AFMC, we're making 1,600 calls a day right now to people that are subject to these work requirements to educate them on what's expected and try to steer them to resources they need to overcome some of these obstacles.
What's been, obviously not to violate any client privilege there, but what's been the feedback from that education process?
A lot of people were not aware of it yet. They don't necessarily, you know, read the, you know, mainstream news, and that it was going to be a requirement was a surprise to some people, but a lot. That's why we're making the effort here on the front end to reach them mm-hmm. and educate them on behalf of DHS.
Anything happening through your organization, Marquita, on that front too?
Absolutely. So we've been engaging in some outreach and education too, really for months leading up to what will be the work requirement going live in June. And so we've actually been working at the kind of community organization level. So things like shelters, homeless shelters, providing the staff with information, trying to make sure that they feel comfortable on walking people through the work requirement and how to comply with it. And so we're going to be continuing that process. The state has also reached out, I would think, to our organization as well as several others and provided us with some information that we can share in terms of outreach. You know, as Ray mentioned, the biggest thing here is making sure that people are aware of the work requirement. And the study, of course, highlights that the great majority of people will meet an exemption category, but those people who are exempt still have to understand what the process is that they'll have to go through in order to successfully take advantage of one of those qualifying exemptions.
No internet access, lack of transportation resources, sometimes in some areas of the state, really not enough jobs to even right. go apply for. Are those legitimate arguments, Ray?
Well, I think the Urban Institute was somewhat biased and obviously is not supportive of this. But I think if you look at how well organized this is compared to other states, you know, 80 hours of activity, it doesn't have to work. It can be, you know, education, schooling, community involvement, volunteerism. There are things that they can do to satisfy this requirement. So I think even in rural areas, there we can make this work. And I think you have to go back, you know, last year when this was, the program was reauthorized, refunded. No, it took a 75% vote. You know, Governor Hutchison literally had to thread a needle to get that. And I think the ability to get this refunded at that supermajority took rebranding it from private option to Arkansas Works and making it somewhat more conservative with these work requirements. That's what got the votes, that's what's kept the coverage, and the challenge now is for us to make this successful. Arkansas is going to be the first. I read today Kentucky's bragging they will be starting July. Not true.
Never want, Arkansas, never want to let Kentucky
Arkansas
be the
starts,
come on now.
Arkansas
basketball's
starts
bad
tomorrow.
Enough.
I think this is pretty well thought out, particularly the involvement of Workforce Services. the technology's there, and again, FMC is there as a partner. I think that the challenge and the mission is to make it successful.
Yeah. Give you the last word on this, Marquette.
I completely understand the political environment, which was a lot of the motivation, in my opinion, behind moving forward with the work requirement. But I think there's a larger conversation here about what people really need in order to connect to meaningful employment, in order to be able to address issues of poverty in our state. And so I think the bigger question is this what people need? Is this the right way to go about supporting families?
And you can see that entire interview with Ray Hanley and Marquita Little on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. Finally today, a quick calendar note for you. On June 29th at 11 a.m., that's a Friday morning, officials will hold a topping off ceremony at the Bentonville construction site of the Helen R. Walton Children's Enrichment Center and the Early Childhood Initiative Center. The new $16.5 million facility is going up on Northeast J Street, just south of the entrance to the Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. So be sure and mark your calendar for that event. And that's all the time we have today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Tahlequah. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Callums. We're back tomorrow at noon and 7 to bring you another edition of Ozarks at Large. And don't forget, we're also with you every Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large. Some of our favorite stories and some new features as well. Weekend Ozarks at Large every Sunday morning beginning at 9 on 91.3. We're going to end this edition of Ozarks at Large with music from Pat Ryan Key. This is a song that was recorded exclusively for Ozarks at Large inside the Carver Center for Public Radio. If you'd like to see Pat Ryan Key live, well, I have good news. We have opportunities to do just that. He will be at JJ's Grill in Fayetteville on June 11th. That is Monday night. And then later in the month, June 22nd, Dixon Street Pub in Fayetteville. And on June 23rd, Brews in Eureka Springs. If you'd like to see his entire schedule of live performances, learn much more about him, and listen to some of his music, you can go to his webpage, PatRyanKey.com. He also has a Facebook page. Just look for Pat Ryan Key on Facebook. Thanks so much for spending part of your Thursday with us. Back tomorrow at noon and 7.
Well, she is coy with her tricks and her questions that get her fears. And I realize I'm a boy, a damn good toy. Well, I am known for trying my best, but my thoughts, y'all, they gave me no rest. 'Cause I'm lost with the end of my, I ought to call it a night. She sits to my left, but I fight her with my right, 'cause I'm so much in love, I gotta wash my hands clean. Yeah. 'cause I'm so